Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by Elite Sport and Spine in Brookfield. Winter doesn't have to be your downtime for golf. In fact, it should be prime time to get your body in shape and improve your game for the upcoming season. Elite Sport and Spine in Brookfield, Wisconsin offers a comprehensive golf performance program. Their innovative approach is geared towards golfers of all ages and abilities and combines medical and fitness assessment, specific golf movements, and TrackMan analysis. Elite Sport and Spine's team of TPI certified providers then creates a plan for you to address your specific limitations, combining golf instruction, physical rehabilitation, and strength and conditioning. Call Elite Sport and Spine in Brookfield at 262-373-9168 for more information, or visit their website at www.elitesportandspinewi.com and click golf performance training. Don't forget, stay tuned to Talking.Golf and you'll hear how you can score yourself a free sleeve of Pro V1 or Pro V1X golf balls just for making the call to our friends at Elite Sport and Spine in Brookfield. He's Gary D'Amato in Augusta, Georgia. I'm Rob Hernandez, just up from the couch, both of us after being glued to the Masters here all weekend long. Gary D'Amato, I don't know what you can say about it. It always over-delivers, I think, in the drama, and maybe not necessarily the drama, but the storyline today with Scottie Scheffler, the world number one coming into the week, and the world number one going out with a bullet.
Yeah, the Masters never does disappoint, does it, Rob? It was just a tremendous final round. All the theatrics by, you know, Rory McIlroy and Zalatoris and Colin Morikawa all putting together great rounds, especially the holdouts from the bunker by those last two on the 72nd hole, and Scottie Scheffler fighting through really a case of early morning nerves. I mean, he got up and said when he woke up on Sunday morning, he said he cried like a baby because he didn't know if he was ready for this moment. And boy, he sure was. He went out and just played like a champion.
A final round of one under par 71. We'll get to the four putt on 18 here in a little bit. He wins by three shots over Rory McIlroy. Shane Lowry and Cameron Smith tying for third at five under. Colin Morikawa rounds out the top five at four under. But as we focus on Scottie Scheffler, we've talked about this here, it seems like frequently since he won out here in Phoenix at the Waste Management Phoenix Open and kind of broke in. And after that, it's been unbelievable the run that this guy has been on. And again, you were waiting for that validation. It kind of goes back, I think, Gary and Dottie Pepper even mentioned it today on the telecast on CBS, that, the confidence that Steve Stricker showed and the committee of captains, I guess, with the Ryder Cup showed in terms of, naming Scottie Scheffler as a captain's pick. I think that was the seed, and now it's certainly blossomed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that had to give Scottie a huge shot in the arm, a huge dose of confidence with Stricker picking him. He went out and justified it at the Ryder Cup, and it's almost been Tiger-esque what he's done the last, 6-7 weeks, Rob, winning four times in his last six starts, getting his first major championship. He's only 25 years old, and it looks like this guy's going to be a star for a long time.
We look at him now, Gary, and I think we see, clearer and clearer every time that he goes out and does something like this, why Steve Stricker picked him. One of the things that sticks out is, to me, he reminds me a lot of Stricker because he's got the great support network. He's kind of your down-home guy that you wouldn't mind running into at your, 19th hole after a round and just shooting the breeze with. He's very likable.
He is. Yeah, he's very relatable. He's, he's a fan of The Office. He talked about how he loves watching The Office on TV. I mean, that's not something you'd ever hear, Tiger Woods say. Just a down-to-earth guy, rooted in religion. He's very, very religious guy. He prayed a lot today before he went out and played. And he's someone, like you said, someone we can all relate to, except for the fact that he hits 330-yard drives and holds everything he looks at.
Another big factor that was mentioned throughout the week is the impact that his caddy Ted Scott had on his week. Scott was on the bag for both of Bubba Watson's wins at Augusta. And what was fascinating to me, to kind of piggyback on what you just said about Scotty being a man of faith, they met at a PGA Tour Bible study group, and started talking about maybe forming a partnership. That partnership right now is probably one of the most dramatic to form and flourish in such a short time ever.
Yeah, Ted Scott, everyone calls him Scotty, just seems to be the perfect person to be on Scotty's side throughout tournaments. Very calming influence. He's got a ton of experience, knows Augusta National. And, you know, Scotty leaned on him a lot this week and has leaned on him since they formed their partnership. And it is paying huge dividends, obviously.
So, Gary, why don't you walk me through your day? What did you think was going to happen and how did it play out compared to expectations?
You know, I thought Cameron Smith was going to, you know, he got off to that great start. And then I think what happened on the third hole when Scotty Scheffler chipped in and Cam Smith made a sort of a mess of the next two holes. And I thought that was a huge turning point early in the day. I thought Cam Smith was going to play better than he did, obviously. And if he wasn't going to play well, where was the challenge going to come from? And it wound up coming from Rory McIlroy, who, you know, shot a brilliant 64, but kind of ran out of holes. It was a little too late. Maybe if the final round was 22 holes, it would have been a different story. But yeah, there was all sorts of emotions going on, as there always are on that back nine, amen corner, ball in the water by Cam Smith. I mean, just everything you can think of seemed to happen in that 2 hour period on the back nine.
Yeah, that sequence at three was pretty poignant because they both wound up short of the green and left and had similar chips. And, you know, we face it all the time as average golfers, you know, when you're trying to outduel the guy you're playing with, who gets to go first, who gets to set the tempo. And that was probably the ultimate. It may not have been Larry Mize-esque in terms of that hole out, but it was, as we look back on it, it'll be one that makes the highlight reels for years to come.
I thought it rattled Cam a little bit because, you know, after Scotty's second shot out of the trees came up short, Cam had a relatively easy 60-yard shot there, and he hit his shot short. And then when Scotty Scheffler chipped in, I thought, you know, that rattled Cam and definitely showed he hit sort of a mediocre chip after that, wound up, you know, making a bogey and then bogey the next hole. So I think that was a huge turn of events there.
Hard for me to believe that we can sit here and possibly, I don't know what your opinion is on it, but a Rory McIlroy 64, it was historic. It was record setting for the Masters in the final round. And yet he left some shots out there. He could have even put more pressure on him. A couple holes down the stretch were, you know, some birdie putts, as we've seen all week from guys, you know, just don't quite take the pace and fall short or just go over the edge of the lip. And that was Rory, you know, a couple of times. And it takes that dramatic hole out on the 18th hole to get to, the, you know, that last birdie. Did you think that he had to get to a certain number to even make Scotty Scheffler pay attention? It really didn't seem like Scheffler was all too, you know, into what was happening behind him because he seemed to be fairly well focused on his task at hand.
Yeah, I thought if Rory could have birdied 15 and gotten, you know, and shot finished with 63, but birdying 15, I think, might have made Scotty kind of like say, whoa, this guy is completely on fire and he's closed the gap. And, you know, it might have had an effect on Scotty, but when he didn't, you know, he had a chance on 14, he didn't birdie 14, he didn't birdie 15, he didn't birdie 16. And Rory even said that three hole stretch where he, you know, he had chances, but didn't come through, proved to be sort of a nail in the coffin for him. If he could have gotten one birdie there and maybe even, and two would have put a great deal of pressure, on Scotty, and also would have made Rory, you know, he could have shot 62 today and he would have been, you know, the lowest score ever in a major championship.
The Rory Colin Morikawa dueling holeouts on that last hole, they were in the same group. And right after McIlroy holed his, Morikawa steps up and holds his. And based on the reaction on social media and the way they reacted for one another, both during the shots and afterward, I think really, you know, the Masters always provides the feel good part for, you know, and showcases golf at its finest. And I felt that was maybe the moment where, you know, we're going to see that one again for years and years, because it does showcase all that's good about the game of golf.
Yeah. You know, you could sit here, Rob, for the next 50 years and watch that the final pairings come in, and you'll never, I don't think, see two guys hole out from that greenside bunker in the final, you know, in the pairing on Sunday. I mean, that just, the odds of that had to be, you know, a million to one. And they, you know, they both hit different shots. Rory took it way up high and let it feed down to the left of the hole, and Morikawa took more of a straight line toward it, and his bunker shot has some gas on it. I mean, it hit the pin pretty hard. So, but you can sit in that gallery for years and years and not see something like that again.
I watched the finals of the drive, chip, and putt last Sunday, and of course the putting part is on the 18th green, and there were two young ladies in the 14-15 division where they both made that putt that the last 15 feet of that, of especially Morikawa's chipping, because it was from that angle, they made it, and everyone thought that was amazing. But to see two guys hole out from bunkers, I mean, that's just nuts.
And not only that, but I mean, they both shot incredible scores. So it wasn't like, you know, they came to the last hole two over par and okay, they holed out and it was nice. I mean, those guys played their butts off all day, and it was what a topper to put on two great rounds of golf.
Yeah, at the time, they finished at 13 under after that little exhibition on 18. And at the time, the field was 39 over. And that was before Scottie Scheffler came to 18th green, which brings me to my next question, Gary. The four putt to finish, a lot of people would walk off and go, oh my God, what did I just do to win my first major? Social media, again, the court of public opinion, which I always like to refer to see exactly whether I'm seeing it the same way. They say it makes Scottie Scheffler even more relatable. What say Gary D'Amato?
I agree with that. And then not only that, Rob, but when they were in Butler Cabin, I don't know if you caught this, but in the green jacket ceremony, when defending champion Hideki Matsuyama was helping Scotty into his green jacket, Scotty got his right arm in and then kind of was like we all do, fishing for that other arm. He went low, he went high, he couldn't find the hole. And he finally got his arm in there and kind of chuckled. And between the four putt double bogey on the last hole, which really didn't mean anything, and, you know, not being able to get his arm in that sleeve, I mean, that just showed the human side of Scotty that we all can relate to. How many times have we tried to put a jacket on and not been able to get our left arm in that hole, Rob?
You know, and Scotty strikes me as being like you and me, Gary, where unless it's a banquet or a dinner, we're not in a jacket like that. So we don't get much practice. Scotty, I think at least he'll be wearing one again next year. And who knows if he'll be putting it on somebody else or having somebody else put it on him again. But that was a cute moment there. Also, watching the ceremony on Golf Channel outside, he finally did get choked up with, you know, talking about his family, his you know, swing instructor, and came to the podium and hadn't really gotten to that point in his master's experience where he thought anything about having to deliver a speech. And that was, you know, pretty, you know, classic Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah, he said in his interview when he came in the interview room that he never in his wildest dreams imagined coming in the press room as a master's champion. So, you know, he had not thought ahead to what he was going to say if he won, that's for sure.
A couple of things to get to in terms of the Masters here as we are on Talking.Golf. Talking.Golf, of course, sponsored by Elite Sport and Spine in Brookfield. I got to change that read, Gary. It's getting to be golf season. We'll talk about that here in a minute. While you were down in Augusta, you saw four seasons this week in Georgia in terms of the weather. I think we've seen it back in Wisconsin. There's still some parts of the state that would not be able to tell you that it's anywhere near spring yet, but we do have a number of courses opening. We'll talk about that in a minute once we get through a couple more things about the Masters. The final analysis of Tiger Woods this week, Gary, I thought he really teased us on Thursday with that 71. It kind of, you know, made you hope that, you know, there'd be some magic there. By the end of it, I was just happy the guy was able to gut out 70 or 72 holes in this return, because let's face it, there were some pretty prominent names that couldn't make that claim.
Yeah, you know, his limp got more pronounceable as the week went on. He hadn't played this much golf and certainly not walked this much golf in a long, long time. And especially on this course, a tough one to walk when you have two good legs. The bar is now closing, Rob, by the way, if you can hear that announcement.
Man.
But, yeah, I lost my train of thought, but
those are the four words that it's appropriate. We include that in the podcast, Gary, because the bar is now closing. Those are the words that everybody in Wisconsin hates to hear. It doesn't matter whether you're in the press room of a golf tournament or somewhere at a supper club on a Friday night.
Getting back to Tiger.
We feel for you.
Yeah. Getting back to Tiger, you know, he gutted it out. You know, his limp became more pronounced as the week went on. I don't know when we're going to see him again, Rob. It's going to take him some time, I think, to recover physically from this. you know, he did make the cut, and I thought that was a victory in itself. And I kind of wonder if, you know, the pain that he was able to overcome in the first round and the second round, he was tied for 19th going in the third round. I think it started to weigh heavily on him, especially maybe emotionally and mentally, because he, you know, he did some things. His putting display, for instance, in the third round was very un-Tiger-like, and I think he was just holding on at the end here.
Well, and it kind of segues into my next comment. I spent a lot of the weekend. I know you like to walk the grounds a lot, and so you might not have been tuned into too much of the TV feed, I thought it was a subpar effort at best by CBS. And two of the moments that stood out today, one was related to Tiger, where they covered nothing about what's next for Tiger. But fortunately, Kara Banks from Golf Channel, working for Sky Sport, the Golf Channel's sister network overseas, did ask him that question. And he did say that he's very unsure whether he'll play at Southern Hills in the PGA Championship, the next major on the calendar. You know, because he just doesn't know, you know, how his body will recover in that month's time. However, he did say emphatically that he will be at St. Andrews for the Open Championship. And at least I think as a golf fan here in 2022, as long as Tiger continues to give you something to look forward to, that's all we can expect out of this guy in his current physical condition.
Yeah, you know, you're right. He teased us with that first round, but I just wonder how much gas is left in the tank. I mean, physically he is, you know, he's a shell of what he was, and he's not getting any younger. It's going to be tougher for him. The good thing about St. Andrews, Rob, is it's a very flat, walkable course. And he's obviously won there and performed very well there. You know, if he's got one last hurrah on him, it might be there.
Well, we will see. Can I throw out one other idea?
Sure.
Tiger and Charlie in the AmFam celebrity foursome against Andy North and Brett Favre.
You think there'd be a little gallery for that one? I think they could sell.
I just think, you know, he owes his putting coach that, doesn't he? Come on.
Yeah, exactly. He's got to pay Strick back for all the putting tips over the years. Yeah, that would set attendance records, I'm sure. People might not be watching much of the golf tournament. They'd be watching the celebrity foursome, I think.
Well, that would be fun. But, you know, it, at this point, you're right. I think let's let the guy recover, see what's next, and hope that, you know, if not, you know, one major, maybe two, I would think would be as much as we'd see him. And I'm good with that. And especially because you look at what, and I think, you know, I made the comment to you, you know, by text during the round today. I don't remember golf being in as good a shape as it is now with Tiger Woods, at least with a foot inside the door of the competitive game still, when we didn't think that would be even possible in 2022. And we see another great young player like Scottie Scheffler on the heels of all these other guys that have been winning majors, you know, the last two or three years. You know, golf is just full of great names. And when we saw a number of them kind of rise to the top today with, you know, McIlroy still there, Morikawa put on a show, Will Zalatoris finished T6, Justin Thomas, you know, made some moves throughout the weekend. I just think it's in a great place right now. Cameron Champ, I think, kind of got overlooked, broke par in both rounds on the weekend. I think it's pretty, you know, I think the game's in a pretty good spot.
Oh, I would agree, Rob. I mean, most of the guys we're talking about too are under 30 or not much over 30. So, you know, barring injury and guys losing motivation or whatever, you know, we could see this a 10-year run of Jon Rahm and Xander Schauffele and Will Zalatoris and all these guys. Certainly Scottie Scheffler is going to be, I hate to say it, but I mean, he could get better. I mean, he's got this huge wave of confidence going. He's got the wonderful short game. I mean, he could win six or seven tournaments this year, Rob.
I want to ask you about a couple guys that didn't maybe perform as well, you know, you've got, you know, basically Scottie Scheffler validating Steve Stricker's decision last year to make him a captain's pick. I was in a pool, a full disclosure, and one of my horses that I was going to ride, you know, was Billy Horschel. And, you know, this is the first major since Billy Horschel kind of, I don't want to say grandstanded about being left off the Ryder Cup team, but had every chance to, you know, show why he deserved to be there. And was very quiet throughout the weekend. He finished 200 a day to finish 43rd. He was one guy. Another guy that I had was Tony Finau. Love the guy to death, Gary, but I'm beginning to wonder if Tony, you know, he struggled to win regular events and get, you know, the quantity of wins under his belt. And he certainly has not been very, you know, he wasn't vocal this weekend in terms of being in the mix after his opening round 71 at Augusta. I don't know if you saw other guys in that mix, but there are some guys right now that are really struggling to be relevant in major championships.
Yeah, Tony being a prime example, Robin, and the problem is he's a great ball striker. He's a great guy, certainly. He's not a great putter. So you put him on these greens, you know, running 13 on the stimp meter with all that slope, and he's a little bit out of his element. But yeah, I mean, look at some of the names who missed the cut. Brooks Koepka, Xander Schauffele, Bryson DeChambeau came in here injured, so maybe he's got an excuse for missing the cut. But, you know, there were some big heavy hitters that missed the cut here at Augusta National.
And add Jordan Spieth to that, too. And it was pretty impressive. Another cool thing out of today's run, I saw on social media that actually DeChambeau was out following Tiger Woods today, which I think speaks highly for both individuals. A guy, you know, following a legend, because again, you never know how many more Masters we'll see in Tiger Woods. Last element here, Gary, from our Masters talk, TV coverage of the Masters. Obviously, as I mentioned, I saw a lot more of it than you did. I thought one of the real great blunders of today was Nick Faldo and Jim Nance were obviously in the 18th tower and also talking about the action well out in the golf course. And when Rory McIlroy made his chip, Faldo basically, you know, spoiler alert, you know, they hadn't gone to it yet. And he's telling, as we're watching something else, you're not going to believe what you're about to see. And I'm sure it just made the truck groan. That was one. They had trouble, you know, trying to read the leaderboard as guys were moving up and down the leaderboard early. And even Jim Nance and Ian Baker Finch, you know, whiffed on a couple early because the leaderboard was very fluid and things were changing, you know, and I think they were probably looking at the same monitor that even on my big screen in front of me here, hard to tell. So I didn't feel that the network coverage was as good as it used to be. Everyone, again, on social media, very critical of the fact that there's only, 5 hours of coverage daily on the weekend. I thoroughly was entertained by Shane Bacon and Colt Knost and Billy Kratzert on the ESPN Plus live feed, you know, of the feature groups. And of course, feature groups means Tiger Woods gavel to gavel coverage, which a lot of times is what the network coverage becomes. So I was just curious. I know that, you know, you weren't in a position, but as you see the evolution of golf TV coverage, you know, where are we headed with this? And you know, it's getting harder to, you know, maybe I don't want to say trust the quality of the network coverage, but, you know, a lot of times what you see on the feed is well ahead of what we're seeing on the network anyway.
Yeah. You know, CBS has always had those 1 year deals with Augusta National. And I think they walk on eggshells a little bit. You know, you mentioned that there's very little or no talk about Phil Mickelson, for instance. Yeah. I didn't know that because I didn't, you know, I only caught a very small percentage of the TV coverage. But, you know, I think because of those 1 year contracts since 1956, you know, they have to be really careful about how they approach this. I think they're very conservative. I would agree with you in the way they cover it. And my goodness, some of the mistakes you're talking about, I didn't see those, but it doesn't sound like they had their best week.
No. And again, and then, you know, I really think that the Golf Central crew, the Live From crew, you know, is starting to come into its own here. And, you know, on Golf Channel, they didn't have a minute of live coverage because, you know, except for the, you know, the look-ins on the putting green. And yet their analysis here has been great. They had, you know, three or four different crews, you know, doing that and, you know, throughout the day. And I you know, so
the bar when you join it all together,
I thought it was pretty good. But, you know, again, this is the Masters. I think we all set the bar pretty high when it comes to our first major of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you expect everyone to be at their very best, not only on the golf course, but in the announcing booth, in the TV booth. You know, maybe I don't know, Rob, I didn't get to see much of the coverage, but maybe it's time to change it up a little bit with some of the announcing duties. I don't know. I know a lot of people are down on Nick Faldo. I don't think he's bad. I much prefer Johnny Miller to Nick Faldo, but you know, maybe it is time to shake up the booth a little bit.
Well, we will continue to, obviously now we'll continue to watch TV golf throughout the rest of the year. as the tour goes back to, I believe it's Hilton Head next week. And it's kind of quote unquote back to normal. Last question, Gary, if you followed Gary D'Amato on social media this week, especially on Twitter, the chicken salad sandwich count was getting up there. Gary, do we need to have some sort of intervention for you? What was the final number?
I really slacked off. You know, I had a shot at Jack Nicklaus's record of 18 majors with 18 chicken brioche salad sandwiches. And I only got to 9, Rob. So I let myself down. I'll be better next year. I promise.
What did you possibly eat the last day? I think you were at 9 yesterday when you were on Chuck's show.
Yeah, I had a chicken sandwich. That's close to chicken salad, right? I mean, we're in the same ballpark. But to be honest, as good as they were, I got a little sick of them after a while.
Well, I tell you what, there's nothing like the concessions. There's nothing like the souvenir stand. I know you were a frequenter of the souvenir shops. Gary, how much are we out on the old credit card?
You know, I hope my wife doesn't listen to this podcast, Rob. I dropped a grand in there. Now, a lot of it was for buddies who say, can you pick me up a shirt? Can you get me a T-shirt? Chuck Garbedine wanted me to get him a shirt and some socks, for crying out loud. I mean, so yeah, I went in there every day, and Jaime Diaz stopped me at one point and said, every time I see you got a bag of merchandise in your hand. So I better get that bill paid off quick.
Well, I did see a friend of mine from back in my Madison days who was in radio, made his maiden voyage to Augusta National, and he might have matched you in terms of dollar for dollar, because he kept posting pictures of stuff he bought. And I'm going in my head, this is, you know, $40 here, $70 there. Holy cow, you know, but you only get one shot at it. And I tell you, I guess the good news was it was a full complement of people able to go back in the souvenir stand on the Masters, on the Augusta National grounds. So that part had to feel pretty good. You were back there for your 29th Masters. Is that correct?
That's right, 29.
So
and counting.
A return to normal there. So now, Gary, as we wrap up our Talking Dot Golf for this week, you and I both have to return to normal, because you know, we can't sit there and look at a TV set of the most pristine golf course in the history of man now until next year. So you're coming back to Wisconsin. I've got good news for you. Golf course is opening everywhere, but maybe Northeast Wisconsin. We rode over this past week that Whistling Straits and Black Wolf Run opened courses on Friday. And then Troy Byrne up in Hudson will open tomorrow. University Ridge a week from tomorrow, or actually a week from Tuesday. So we're getting close. Are you looking forward to coming back?
I am. I'm driving back, Rob. I'm stopping overnight tomorrow in Southern Indiana, and then making the drive home on Tuesday the rest of the way. But I saw an extended forecast, Rob, and I'm seeing a high of 41 next weekend in Milwaukee. Come on. I mean, when are we going to warm up at home? Maybe I'll just stay down here for another week.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's been, you know, looking at some of the divisions. So we also had a full complement of high school and college golf events this week. First week of that high school golfers could be out. Not many events played, Gary. And those that were, we had, I believe it was Mequon Homestead winning a tournament down where 8 schools from Wisconsin went down to Normal, Illinois to play. And at the Den at Fox Creek. And, you know, they were all bundled. That got shortened from 36 to 27. A lot of the Division III college tournaments that were going on this week featured several layers. I think UW Green Bay going down to Omaha for a Monday-Tuesday event. They played last week somewhere where it looked like Ashley Kalka was, kind of bundled in more layers than you and I would wear, in the middle of January. So you're right. It's just not... quite mid-season form. So patience, and it will come. Last thing I think we should talk about is a story that Dennis McCann wrote and then updated about a new owner up at Troy Byrne. And I bring it up because when's the last time, Gary, we've had an owner of a golf course who is the world's most successful caviar entrepreneur? That's a first for Wisconsin golf. And that is Bill Holst, the new owner of Troy Byrne up in Hudson. And that was a fun story.
I love Dennis's story. That was a good one. I know it's doing very well on our site. I played Troy Byrne probably 15 years ago, Rob, and I thought it was a wonderful golf course. It's really kind of a Twin Cities course because it's in Hudson. It's only 30 minutes, I think, from St. Paul. But we claim it. It's in Wisconsin, and it's a great golf course. It really is. It's got to be in the top 10 in the state, I think.
I believe it's the University Ridge of the Northwest, and those two courses maybe don't get the acclaim that the Century Worlds and the Sand Valleys and the Whistling Straits and the Kohler courses and Erin Hills get, but I think real solid, and glad that that it has a good new owner. To your point, Gary, being a Twin Cities course, he owns courses Clifton Highlands and Prescott in Wisconsin, and then Gopher Hills Golf Course in Canyon Falls, Minnesota, Lake City Golf Course in Lake City, Minnesota, and then Red Wing Golf Course in Red Wing, Minnesota. So by far the highest profile of those courses. And in fact, he mentioned that before he bought the course, he wasn't sure he could even afford to play Troy Byrne, but he will now because he owns the place, and a good thought there. What else, Gary, once you get back, what are you looking forward to on the golf scene? And how long does it take to get over the Masters hangover?
Yeah, I'll get over it pretty quick. I think Thursday I'm going down to Kenosha, Rob, and there's a small company, startup company, that's manufacturing rectangular putter shafts. And they've got they've got a website, and they're saying that this is a better way to putt. You can grip the putter all different ways. So I'm going to go down there. Anytime there's a company that makes golf stuff in Wisconsin, I think it's interesting. So I'm going to do that. And then before you know it, Rob, we're going to be covering tournaments, some high school stuff toward the end of the season. And then boom, we're into summer and off and running.
Well, and we just passed the 30-minute mark. I told you I'd hold you at 30 minutes so you get writing. But Wild Rock was one of them that was supposed to open on Friday. They had to wait till Saturday because of some late snow. And I was emailing with Pat Stein, and I said on your behalf, get open. But I don't care when you open, but just make sure that when Gary comes up to cover U.S. Open local qualifying, that you don't give him the same weather you gave him the last time. And he said he can't promise anything, but he's maybe if we get these cold temperatures out of the system this week, by that first week of May, they'll be long gone.
Yeah, that's exactly a month from tomorrow, U.S. Open local qualifying. And I still say Austin Kaczorowski's 70 at Wild Rock that day was one of the best rounds of golf I've ever seen. And I got to say, I didn't see much of it because I was huddled in the clubhouse. It was 42 degrees and raining sideways. And Jim Kelch and I, we went out for about 10 minutes and said, forget this. We went back in the clubhouse to warm up. That was a great round of golf.
That was. So we'll count down to U.S. Open local qualifying. Of course, a lot of college events, a lot of high school events this week on the old scoreboard. And Gary, get writing. We will see you again next week when we talk golf.
All right. Sounds great, Rob.
All right. For Gary, I'm Rob. Talking.Golf, sponsored by Elite Sport and Spine in Brookfield. Winter doesn't have to be your downtime for golf. In fact, it should be prime time to get your body in shape and improve your game for the upcoming season when spring finally arrives. Elite Sport and Spine in Brookfield, Wisconsin offers a comprehensive golf performance program. Their innovative approach is geared towards golfers of all ages and abilities and combines medical and fitness assessment, specific golf movements, and TrackMan analysis. Call Elite Sport and Spine in Brookfield at 262-373-9168 for more information. I forgot to tell you in the middle of the show, when you do that, if you just tell them you heard about it here at Talking.Golf, you can score yourself a free sleeve of Pro V1 or Pro V1X golf balls just for making the call to our friends at Elite Sport and Spine in Brookfield. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.